Lorna.
Okay.
So. So. Watching the time. Good to see everybody. We have lots of people here, staff who I haven't seen for a long time. So welcome to all of you. And today we're having a 1 hour meeting. It's time certain because some of the staff have other commitments. And we called this meeting because the commission, and particularly this committee, the Wildlife Committee, has been following some guidance and discussion that we've had with staff regarding cougar public safety management. It really dates back a couple of years. We've heard real concerns at several meetings from Northeast Washington residents about cougar issues, and asked staff to take a look at cougar public safety management. And they have. There's an internal working group that's been hard at work on this. And this, since this is the committee that's been kind of following this along, we called this to get an update. And that's what this meeting's about, to hear what's been going on, because it's been a while since we've had an update on this. So with that introduction, I'm going to turn it over to Eric Gardner.
Thank you, Commissioner Thorburn, and welcome, and thanks for being here to all of the commissioners. I also want to, you've already mentioned it, but point out that we do have several department staff, many of the members of the Cougar team, the Cougar safety team that we're going to be talking about today. They're also listening in, and we may call on some of them at some point if we have questions specific to the areas that they're most familiar with. But I appreciate being here. My name is Eric Gardner. I'm the director of the Wildlife Program. And I do have about a 20-slide presentation, and I'm going to try to maybe walk through that. Then any remaining time, we can have a discussion kind of about what you've heard and where we're headed. So I'm going to share my screen here. And let's get to where we're at. Or tell me when you're seeing the slide that says Cougar Safety Team.
There it is. Very good. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. I'm going to try, so it doesn't look like, so I'm trying to look, so I'm looking towards the camera as best as I can. All right, so thank you. So as mentioned, Cougar Safety Team, and we do have several other members, so I'll move on. I'm going to start with this slide. So most of you, and perhaps even others who, if you were watching some of the earlier commission meetings before you became commissioners, may be familiar with this slide. Back in May of 2020, we presented it to the commission in a discussion. It was subsequent to the commission's decision to implement option 4 for recreational hunting. And after that, there was still ongoing dialogue and conversation about what else we needed to do for cougar management. And we presented this slide as a way of summarizing the different issues that we had actually heard during the cougar season setting discussions. And during that, you know, I mean, I think it's fair to acknowledge that some folks didn't think we went far enough with recreational hunting, and others, you know, weren't necessarily thinking what we had done was necessary or would to deal with the cougar safety issues and concerns that we had been hearing. And so we recognized that, and we wanted to kind of capture the different places where we had heard concern and the need to do more work, presented that to the commission, and basically said, let us work on this cougar safety topic in a different venue outside of recreational hunting, and see if we could tackle the issue through the other avenues essentially that we have. So I'm gonna come back to this slide in a little bit. This is the version that was submitted or presented back in May of 2020. it into four categories, just as, you know, we're going to follow this kind of theme as we walk through the presentation: work around outreach, work and how we can be more responsive to the public, work around science, how science informs decisions, et cetera, and then work with partnerships on important issues. So I've also shared this screen before, this slide before, but I wanted to point out that this has been a really robust conversation that's involved a lot of staff throughout the agency, and the team has grown. So since we talked to you last and gave you an update, all of the names in red have been added to the team. So Cassina Lee is the Region 5 director, and so she's got a lot going on with Klickitat County and cougar issues there, so she's become an important member of the team. Scott McCorkadale is our Region 3 wildlife program manager, and he brings a practical on the ground as well as research perspective to the team. I'm going to come back to Stephanie. Alan Myers also provides additional enforcement engagement as far as on the ground practical experience and response to how conflict issues are being dealt with. And then back up to Stephanie Simic. She was with the agency before, left for about a year and did some bear work back east. Thankfully, she came back to us. The whole time she was gone, the position was vacant. And I really calling out that much needed bandwidth and very thankful for her return. She's our carnivore section manager. She has some other duties associated with that. But for the purposes of this discussion, it's that carnivore focus. And she's been a very welcome addition to the team because she's really given us critical support, you know, in a conversation that needs to be properly resourced. And we were hurting without somebody in that position, and just very thankful that Stephanie is back with us. So I'm going to move into those sort of four pillars or areas where we had identified that work could be done, and just kind of start with the outreach piece of it. And just a reminder that we talked about this plan earlier. This is the piece you've seen the most of in an earlier presentation because we got out ahead of this one early. So a little bit of this will be redundant. But in 2010, we had worked with Responsive Management to develop a cougar outreach and education plan to address communities around the state. And it actually includes information kind of at the community level. It's not specific statewide. Fast forward till now, and we've taken the information in that plan, and instead of having kind of a piecemeal outreach plan, we've developed a more comprehensive statewide communication strategy and updated it to not only improve and work on some of the already existing tools within that toolkit, but adding, you know, new tools, because things have changed in the last decade, you know, things like being able to develop and put out videos, proactive media outreach has changed through social media, et cetera. So we've been able to build upon the 2010 plan and develop an internal statewide Cougar Strategic Communications Plan. So this is now in play, and we're actively engaged, of course, always have been, but continue to be engaged in outreach. The plan that I'm talking about has, recognize Samantha Montgomery. She's on the call today and she's part of the team. She's the one who really put her energy behind kind of updating what we knew from that 2010 document and putting it into this communication strategy. So thanks to Samantha's efforts, and of course the team reviewed and was engaged as she developed that. We now have, you know, this new plan with the following goals, and I'll just read them quickly, but increasing the public's awareness of human safety concerns and how to deal with that, protection of property so that they can be cougar complaint rate is steady or declining. We kind of have that goal. We would like to certainly not see increases in cougar complaints and preferably get those to decrease because we've been dealing with the issue. And we'd like to increase the understanding of cougar ecology, behavior, safety awareness, coexistence in cougar country, and do more safety outreach at the community level.
You're leaning on Dick.
So somebody's active there. We have done outreach, and we have some examples of some targeted social media outreach. We've done targeted ads for coexisting with cougars in the Bainbridge Island area as an example. That's a recent topic. We had a cougar tooth blog that we shared with the Wildlife Committee a while back. It's had a lot of interest. Over 24,000 people on social media have reviewed that blog with 200 comments. So that's a pretty good in our engagement rate there. Our cougar videos have a total viewership of 22,000 plus views across Facebook and YouTube. And these are videos that we use to help communities learn about hiking safely and animal husbandry. The hiking safety video specifically references bear spray as the most effective tool, and there's a demonstration there on how to use it. And we can provide the link. It's not on the screen, but we can provide the commissioners the link to those YouTube videos. They're also pretty easy to find on YouTube just by searching for WDFW and Cougar. But there's more. You know, we do have materials that we put out to try to work within the communities. And here's an example where we worked with the city of Bellevue to translate our information into some different languages so that we could communicate to other constituents, other members of the public that that this will be easier information for them to glean from. It's been put into Chinese, Korean, Russian, and Spanish. And of course, we're continuing to look to do more. So you can see we've got lots of communication methodologies and tools that are kind of listed on the left side of this screen. I believe this is an updated Discover Washington's Cougar pamphlet. I know we recently at least updated the bear pamphlet. So this is something that we use frequently. We use them as door hangers in areas that are having cougar interaction. So we do like to present these communications at that local level, community meetings, et cetera. And I'm going to talk about the door hanger piece and the use of this material in a little bit when I talk about some improvements we made with our data management systems and how we're kind of connecting how we track where there are problem areas and then how we respond to those areas. Let's see. So I'm going to shift into one of the other kind of pillars or areas where we said we knew we wanted to do increased work. And that was the kind of the header of being responsive to the public and being able to, you know, provide information and actually, you know, show up and respond and deal with community concerns. So in this case, we are actively reviewing the department's dangerous wildlife policy and its associated procedure. So the Cougar Safety Team members are connected with that effort, but we do have a subset of that and other department staff who are involved in the policy and procedure review, and that's underway. This procedure describes the agency's response to public reports of interactions, primarily with cougar and bear. We do recognize, I mentioned that it's being updated. It's a little bit outdated, I believe 2007. As we're working through it, we want to update our logic, our thinking, what our responses should be, clarify roles and responsibilities, but it is our guiding policy at this time. And as I mentioned, there's a cross-program working group that's been assembled and is tackling that, that review. Another pretty important item in this being responsive to the public is the database improvements that I mentioned. So we are still seeking improvement. We're doing much, much better than we've done, but there's still more work to be done. But we have, as you, I think, know, we have work done both on the enforcement side of the agency and the wildlife side of the agency. And for a long time, data was tracked differently and sat in different locations and was managed differently. You know, calendar year on the enforcement side, wildlife program was more focused on recreational hunting. And so the year was different. It was more based around that. And so our data sets have not always matched up, and it's been difficult to tell a clean, transparent story when your data doesn't seamlessly flow together. And so we've been working hard to make that happen and to do better at our data management. So as that's happening, there's a recognition that enforcement is actually changing and transitioning their entire data management system from an older system known as CODI to something that's been around for quite a while, but Washington hasn't used as much, which is Spillman. So we kind of have this transition where we want to make sure we're concentrating on getting moved over to the Spillman system for enforcement, but that was going to take some time and we still have to work within the CODI system. So even though we know we're going to have to carry what we're doing into Spillman, it was important to go ahead and continue to make improvements in that CODI report management system. That's what the RMS stands for. So and I believe we have Deputy Chief Golden on the call today if we need to dig into this one in any greater detail. But we've been improving that system to provide for better code so that we can have improved reporting about what the call was actually about, what was actually observed on site, et cetera. And we've added access to that system. Like I said before, that was an enforcement system and wildlife was using a different system to document conflict or calls. And now we've got our conflict specialists with direct access into that system. It seems like that might be a no-brainer, but it's not as simple as that. These enforcement systems have sensitive information that's only should be available to enforcement officers, et cetera. So there had to be the right methodology to get our wildlife staff into what would otherwise be an enforcement system. We've improved our officer reporting criteria and also for wildlife conflict specialists for all related calls. And like I mentioned, we're now taking those same improvements that we've been working on in CODI and making sure that they're going to be carried forward and perhaps even improved upon more into the new Spillman system. These database improvements actually have some real life practical application. I just grabbed this screenshot today. This is not a publicly available site yet, but it will be within the next week or so. And what it is an update to the site that is available, which is our wildlife conflict and dangerous incident reports, where we provide information on wolf, cougar, and grizzly bear interaction. When you look at it today on our website, it's hard to distinguish the detail. You can separate out the last year's worth of observations from the previous 5 years and then from the previous historic data set. But you don't get a lot of information about what that report was actually about. So the improvements to the CODI and the Spillman system are feeding improvements to our web-based interface, and this will be available to the public soon. And you can see on the screen, it instead of just having a series of blue stars across the map, it provides distinguishing icons or markers to talk about the different type of sighting that was offered into the system and if it was confirmed or not. So I'm thinking this is going to be a very helpful thing, just not only from the public, but our staff do use this data. They use it now. They go in and I'm going to highlight some great work done by one of our conflict specialists, Todd Jacobson, as an example. But Todd has done an excellent job of going in and looking at this and trying to find kind of areas where there are hotspots of conflict and then using that to go door to door and going back to our outreach materials and the pamphlets that we hang, et cetera, to put those, make those readily available to the members of the public that are experiencing, conflict or at least engagement with cougars and have an interest in it. So there's some real practical experience with all of these improvements, both on the public and the internal department management side. Also responsive to the public, I have to at least, mention this. Of course, all of you were involved in the recent decision to approve the non-lethal pursuit program for hounds related to cougar. The cougar team was, certainly involved in a lot of that discussion. Many of us had many conversations with several of the commissioners and others as that process unfolded leading to the commission vote. But we also heard during that process a very high interest in making sure that there was follow through on the development of the program and that wildlife program and our carnivore specialist staff's interest and information. Their experience is kind of built into how that program is developed, and that we have good cross-programmatic communication. So that is ongoing, and it says next steps, but actually they've already begun, but our cross-program engagement is going to occur not only at the through the Cougar Safety Team. This group that you're hearing from today is kind of a overarching group, but with focused meetings with a subset of staff. And that actually began, begin might not be the right word, but I think the first significant meeting occurred yesterday between, or 2 days ago, between Enforcement and Wildlife Program, and they had good productive conversations about, how to continue that development of that program and how we'll communicate between programs about things that need to be known to the enforcement officers as they consider issuance of those permits, and how we can evaluate what's happening as a result of those passes being, I said permits, but I'm sorry, they're passes. But as a result of those passes being being issued. All right. Another thing that we feel belongs in this category, this is an important one. Unfortunately, it's a little early today to talk about the outcome of this, but I wanted you to be aware that we're actually engaged in a statewide, region by region, after action review of the 2020 season. We're wanting to hear directly from staff how things went in 2020 when it comes to being able to respond to the community's concerns for safety and cougar engagement or encounter situations. And so these meetings have been held at 5 of the 6 regions so far. The other one is coming soon. First off, we kind of want to have the meetings acknowledge the great work that's being done by our regional staff and talk about that work, but also understanding and learning about how maybe regional responses can vary based on opportunity, based on local community needs and concerns, et cetera. And we want to identify as an outcome of this, we want to identify where consistency could help us improve, maybe where we need to have adaptability as well. Doesn't say that on the slide, but that's a potential outcome. And also where we might need to make changes or have additional actions that we could build upon to be better at what we do and being responsive at the community level. So looking forward to that. It was assigned to the regional directors. They're the ones who are running this at the regional level back at the very end of the year. And like I said, 5 of the 6 have completed it. One's left. We're hopeful to have a roll-up summary by mid-April. And we're going to continue to discuss those through this group of people with the Cougar Safety Team, and would envision bringing that back to EMT and talking to the Wildlife Committee, at least, on what we've learned through that as we move forward. I'm going to go back just really quickly. I mentioned the dangerous wildlife policy that's being reviewed before, and I just want to kind of draw a connection that we feel this effort is going to be very informative to how we also consider what changes may or may not need to be made in that dangerous wildlife policy and the associated procedure. And it could, help guide what we provide as agency-wide direction on this topic into the future. So we're really hopeful to learn and improve from that effort that's underway. I wanted to share some data with you. This is the data that we shared with the regions as they planned for their assessments for the 2020 year. We wanted them to make sure they had accurate information about what had occurred. All of this information is based on a calendar year. It's coming out of the enforcement database. And I think it's worth noting that we respond to quite a few, we have quite a few calls. The information you see in front of you are calls that enforcement is fairly certain were actually true cougar calls and not something that may or may not have been, but where we were pretty confident there's some type of legitimate cougar interaction going on. And you can see the breakdown by year for 2019 and 2020 and by region in the table on the left. And then you can see the number of times that the department responded on the right. And so I won't go cell by cell, but I think the main numbers down at the bottom are worth noting. Over 1,000 cougar-related calls in 2019, about 900 in 2020. And you can see that our officers and or conflict specialists may have been helpful as well on some of these, responded to 680 in 2019 and 533 this past year. A little bit more data that we shared with the teams, or with the regions, I should say, is the table on the left shows cougar safety removals statewide. Now, these are department removals. These are where we would have been a part of the action, so we're familiar and have the data. And you can see there was definitely an increase in 2018. I do need to point out that we also began a lot of our database improvements in 2018 and 2019. And I think we would say that the increase from 32 to 80 is not necessarily directly solely tied to an increase in that, but also just better reporting, you know, and better management of our data at that point in time. And then you can see in 2020, it was at 99. And off to the right there, there's a table that breaks that down by region. And so again, putting this in the context of those regional assessments, you know, you can see the difference by region. And I think that's reflected in our cougar population as well as the numbers of calls we get. And you can see the spread of where the cougar removals have occurred across the state. So when we get our results of the cougar assessments or the 2020 assessments, we're going to be very interested in, you know, kind of the where there's consistency and where there are differences in our ability to meet the community needs across the state, especially looking at the different level of calls in those areas and the need to respond and then the result in the removals. I'm going to shift to the next pillar, which was science informing decisions. I'll stop. I think Barbara has a hand up.
So Eric, would you rather take questions now while we're on the slide or wait till you're done?
I'd be happy to take questions now. I would certainly hope that we'd be able to come back and complete the presentation since I have my 2 o'clock deadline, but.
This is okay. Yeah. Cause I have a bunch of questions, but on this slide and the one before, what I immediately did is compare region one, where there are seems to be a lot of conflict, with my region, which is region six. So can you go to the previous slide for a second?
This one?
Yep. I was surprised to see that in 2020, cougar calls responded to, there's 178 and region one, and region six was 95, which was the second highest. So then next slide, if you don't mind. But in region one, 69 cougars were killed. In region six, 3 cougars were killed. Is there an explanation for that? I'm just wondering it seems like if we had the second highest number of problems, then if we were across the board being, you know, same policies, we would also have the second highest number of dead cougars.
I will see if Deputy Chief Paul would like to respond to that, since I think this is mostly enforcement driven.
Okay, and Eric, it's fine if he wants to I would like to talk about this either now or later. It doesn't matter.
I think it's a great question and a great observation. And I will say that I believe this is one of the reasons we're doing the 2020 assessment and believe we'll continue that annually. And we're trying to look for, you know, why those differences, are there changes that are needed? Do they reflect what happened on the ground? Are they appropriate? Are there different community interests driving it? And so I think that's part of what we hope to get out of the assessment. I think we're all interested in hearing that.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Commissioner Anderson, I believe you are next, and then Commissioner Smith.
Yeah, looking at the chart, I'm trying to place where Klickitat is. Is that in region three, five. Or is that in five?
That's in five.
Yeah. So can you go to the next, the other slide?
Yeah.
So does that, so that's the calls and response to, is that the department or is that Klickitat County as well?
That's the department. The only time it would include anything with Klickitat County is if our officers participated. That's my understanding anyway. Deputy Chief can weigh in if I've got that wrong, but this is department information based on our responses and our calls, and same with the removals. If we were, you know, if we were there alongside Klickitat County, the data would show up here. My understanding is that our calls in Region 5, especially in Klickitat County, went down. We think a lot of the public did call Klickitat County instead. And to my knowledge, what we have documented as far as removals occurring at the county level was 8 animals. And that was all back in the summer. I think they haven't removed a cat since July or so. And they've maybe gone out on 3 calls here in the new year.
So if you go to the next slide, if you would. So that 2020 figure in Region 5, just to be clear, does not include the Klickitat County Sheriff's efforts, and it would be, there would be additional removals there if that was the case.
That is correct.
Okay. Okay, just wanted to be clear. Thanks. Okay.
Thank you. Commissioner Smith.
I probably am going to save most of my questions through the end. And so I kind of have my hand up here as a placeholder. But, you know, these slides kind of make this process look somewhat simplistic, where cougar complaints have been on the rise, you know, since 2017, it looks like. And then we've been upping our game on responding and by, you know, mostly killing cougars. And then this year or last year, 2020, there's a decrease, but there's a much more complex story to be told. And I hope we get to that. In other words, what's the age class of the cats causing these problems? Is increased hunting pressure bringing down the age class? And so are we seeing more younger cougars that are, you know, the problem animals? It's not straightforward. So, and I also do think that we have very disparate responses in my, you know, experience in how cougar calls are treated across the state. And I think that's a conversation that seems to continue. And, you know, recently the Bainbridge Island cat issue, one of the enforcement officers, and I don't remember if he was even named, but recommended that citizens carry a firearm, a concealed weapon, as a, you know, a safety measure against cougars, which I think is not the kind of advice we should be giving. You know, bear spray is a good safe thing to carry with you. And if your dog gets attacked by a, you know, another dog, et cetera, it's just kind of good all around safety measure. But advising people to carry a firearm, especially if they're not very familiar with them, I don't think is good advice. So I just think we really need to get consistent messaging, consistent response with some good data to base it on. So I'll leave my comment there. It's not really a question, just kind of a comment.
Yeah, thank you. And I'll quickly respond a little bit anyway. We are anxious and interested to provide the demographic information related to harvest. The current cougar season runs through April. We track that information, you know, regularly. And so it's just premature for us to kind of come in at this point. We could talk about the data we have on hand now, but we'll be able to do more thorough analysis of that population demographic, et cetera, later in the year. We're interested to see how the new hunt structure rolled out, what happened, what was the result, and share that information in depth with the commission. I think we were asked to do that as a result of the decision to implement option 4, and we're looking forward to being able to bring that data and kind of deep dive into that as we move forward. And then hey, on Eric, the messaging, yes, go ahead, Deputy.
So I think Commissioner Smith was sort of interested in the age class of the cougar removal numbers, like the 99 and the 133.
Yes, I think that too. And I don't have that I don't have that readily available. It's part of that overarching database that we use that kind of tracks the full scope of our removals. And so I apologize, but I don't have that readily available. I think we'll be more prepared to do that once we come in with the end of the season data.
And you know, the reason it's important is because there's been several research, you know, papers that have pointed out that it's the younger class of cougar. When the older class is removed, young cougars remain. That's often when we see conflict increase, and that's been shown through the research. So it is important to look at.
Thank you for that comment. Commissioner Anderson, are you back in line or is your hand up by mistake? You're muted.
No.
Okay, very good. Okay, I'm going to move on then, but good dialogue, and we can hopefully come back to some of it here in a minute. So it's actually a really good segue. We just heard Commissioner Smith talk about the science and what drives, you know, our decision making and policy setting and what we know about that science and how it relates to conflict, et cetera. We heard a lot about that during the development of the recreational hunting options. You know, we had a lot of discussion regarding the science that informs cougar management as it relates to conflict, ranging from topics such as hunter harvest and how public safety removals may impact the population demographics that could in turn impact conflict. That's exactly what Commissioner Smith was just talking about, you know, and even beyond, do public safety removals actually work? Are they effective? Are they a long-term solution, et cetera? And so we heard a lot of that, and the department wants to review and improve our understanding of what research actually provides meaningful insight regarding how management actions address or impact human cougar conflict. And we've therefore established the science review panel. And I'm gonna get more detail here in a second, but it's consisting of internal and external experts. And the purpose of this committee is to review the research papers that address cougar conflict. We believe this review is gonna help inform policymakers and management decisions regarding which research is most applicable with which management action or policy or decision. And our goal is to have a report that sort of ranks or evaluates scientific rigor of the literature that's out there by fall of this year. So we're hoping we can get it in sooner than that, but I think it's realistic to think that by mid-fall or so, we will have a document to share. A little bit more detail on this effort is, you know, we're going to, and I've already begun assembling peer-reviewed literature and agency professional reports from the last 15 years that speak specifically to cougar conflict, because we're really focused on the conflict side of the equation here. We're going to assess that literature as to what questions the authors actually attempted to address and how well they accomplished that task. We're going to assess the literature in terms of the scientific rigor that is applied and identify which works and which ones speculate, maybe without data, on topics that the authors didn't intend to address, and also which ones speak to what they intended to address and is it solid science or not. And we hope to identify additional research questions of interest that maybe haven't been adequately addressed to date so that we can either look at those at the agency level or communicate that need to the scientific community, because maybe it's something partners could help us with in the long run. So we have a team put together to do this analysis. I think you might be interested a little bit in the process. The names on the left are all internal WDFW staff. And you can see it covers a broad scope of our staff and includes our bear and cougar and carnivore specialist, as well as our science chief and game division manager. And then we've got four folks external who have offered their services to help with this discussion. How we got here was Jerry, Scott, and Anise, who are on the left. I want to point out that those three combined have over 90 years, maybe 100 years of wildlife management experience, and they're fairly connected in the wildlife profession, especially in these arenas. And so they sat down and worked to identify state and federal professionals that have research experience and that are known to be objective, critical thinkers. For example, some of them here are often sought out for literature review for publications to ensure that there was good rigor behind the science and that the paper is adequate for publication. So they brought together forward some names, and that was vetted with the team. We talked to all of the members of the team and asked how they felt about the panel and did it have, you know, good, robust representation. Everyone agreed that the people on the team looked good. We didn't have any additions. There was, I believe, one comment that a lot of these folks kind of come with a background that is in active management, kind of dealing with the presence of cougars on a landscape. I think that that's an accurate assessment, but that's really not why they were selected. They were selected because of their attention to detail, their credibility, their ability to apply that that scientific rigor to their thinking and their credibility and expertise in that. So we think it's a pretty good panel, and we're looking forward to, you know, kind of having that analysis of what the current state of the science is and where we think it can be most useful and where we might need more. I'm almost done. I don't have a lot on this slide. We do a lot with partnerships, and I don't want to not acknowledge that. We do a lot of good work with a lot of partners already with cougar management and outreach and education, but we need to do more. And we recognize that. We've been working through these kind of steps to get to where we are at today. But we know that there's more work ahead of us and more important work and controversial work, challenging work. And so we are going to, and we said this a while ago, but we are now at the place where we are going to lean into development of an external working group committee. So we're the Cougar Safety Team's next big task in front of them is to kind of formalize what that looks like, evaluate the need for that group and the scope, develop what the charter would be, begin to identify potential members and set that into action to work on some of the issues that we have in front of us. So that's probably the next big step to come. I'm going to come back to the slide that we started with from May of 2020. And I just want to point out that the columns in the center here that have the blue kind of highlights around them, those used to be in blue, and I feel comfortable that we can move them into the underway category. So the blue highlight kind of is their old status, and green is kind of moving that we've parked them into a more formally underway discussion. And off to the right, the wording isn't quite right from the old plan. It's reinvigorate partnerships with local elected commissions, and NGOs. And below, in the reference to the WAC, you see an acknowledgement of using an external working group. But I've kind of parked that one with a bright yellow highlight as future work, but where we're leaning into right now, which is the formation of the external working group that I just talked about. So I'm really encouraged by this. We've all been waiting to get here. I know it seems like it's been a while, but I feel this is going to be an important step. And I'm closing with this, other than just a question slide. So this is the last one, just a little bit of a timeline. We do have some important work ahead of us. And I don't even think the team that I just talked about, the working group, is on here, but that'll be in motion in the same time frame starting now and over the next few months to get that organized. And I think I will leave it there without taking up too much of people's time, because I know there's a bunch of questions.
So, Eric, before we turn to Lorna and others' questions, I'd like to invite Deputy Chief Golden to maybe make a few comments about the questions that have been raised so far and anything else that you want to add, Deputy Chief.
Perfect. Thank you, Commissioner. I did have some comments. If we could go back to the data slides, Eric, it might be helpful. Just to provide some clarity to these numbers, we brought specifically these two numbers and not some previous numbers for a specific reason. And I think it's probably important for everybody to understand that the data that this comes from is our enforcement records management system. That system we've had for, I believe, about 10 years, and it is a law enforcement records management database that has been adapted to natural resource law enforcement use. So what it's doing here, it does a fairly good job of. It tracks, I mean, these could be shoplifting calls or domestic violence calls. It accounts for officers' activity and time, but mostly it's for officer safety. So we track people, vehicles, vessels, and locations that our officers go to for enforcement purposes so that we have historical data on that incident. So, and how that translates to officer safety is if an officer contacts another person or goes to a residence on repeated occasions, they can reference this system and tell what's happened there before, what our involvement is. And ideally, these systems communicate with other enforcement agencies, and that the system that we are transitioning to has some capabilities to do that, though I don't think we all have that fleshed out exactly. So we've always tracked as a call for service dangerous, injured, and problem wildlife. And so looking at the numbers here, if I remember off the top of my head, in 2019, I think we had over 3,000 overall calls for service related to those three categories. In 2020, it was 2,600 or something. So that includes all species and all three categories. So we've had to make improvements to, starting in 2018, when this started to become an issue, making improvements to our records management system to capture the data that other people are wanting. We've done it before. GUI duck was an issue 4 or 5 years ago. We had to make some changes to our system to capture GUI duck information for specific purposes. The reason I bring that up is that previous data, once you make a change in the data, previous data is no longer tells you the same thing. So that's why we have this snapshot of 2019 and 2020, because of an earlier slide where Eric was talking about some of the improvements we've made to our data management system. So that includes, I think right now on a incident report form, there's 25 different fields that make up totally probably 60 different categories that officers have to go through and select. So every time we add one of those, we have to do training on it and awareness for the officers so they know what it's for. So this data represents improvements that were made in 2018 to our reporting. So it should be better information to be what you think it is, which is under Cougar calls is calls that came in to WildCom, State Patrol, County Dispatch, or individual officers that came into us that we had a chance to reply to. The Cougar calls responded to were ones basically that were not handled through a phone call or an email with advice. That's what those numbers mean. And if you go to the next slide, Eric, so removals is kind of has some of the same qualities. In 2018, when there definitely was a spike in removals and activity. I was just talking to Becky Bennett right before this and trying to remember, because that 80 number in 2018 represents really what she did was a hand count of all activity, of all removals, because we weren't tracking that because we didn't need to and nobody had asked us to in that kind of way. So she had to go through all of our incident reports and find out specifically if an animal was removed and if it was multiple animals removed. So I think the data at the time told us it was about 65 or 70. And by the time she went through all of it by hand, it was 80. And we've not done that for 2017 previous. So I'm trying to remember what other questions might have come up.
Yeah. Commissioner Baker asked about, do you have any sense of the difference between the removals in Region 1 and Region 6, since there is kind of the high count calls?
Yeah, I don't right off the bat. I think we probably have to go through individual reports to kind of see, like, try to categorize them in some way to figure out what the differences are. I mean, they're all, each one of those is a separate incident of a separate thing that happened in a separate place to a separate person with a separate cat. So I'm not, I mean, we could come up with criteria on, you know, what we want to answer there. I mean, I understand the basic question of, you know, why is it higher in one area with generally the same number of calls? But it would, we probably have to hand review all of the reports to find that out.
Thanks. Is there anything else that you'd like to add to Eric's presentation from the enforcement perspective before I start calling on commissioners?
Just on the numbers on this slide, some of these numbers would represent, so it's not a county removal, but other counties occasionally remove cats, but if we're there, so all these numbers represent we were there. That's what that RMS system is for, is what did our officers do? So that's why other counties' removals, if we weren't there, wouldn't be portrayed in these numbers. They may tell us about them later. And like Eric portrayed that information from Clickitat County. And that's where most of them are. There's been very few in Stevens County. And I think our officers are on all of those. There may have been one in Lincoln County, but I think our officer was there. So the reports were created on those.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Lauren, I know you've had your hand up, but Jim put his hand up, and Fred, and you said you've had, so I'm going to call on Commissioner Anderson, Commissioner Kuntz, and then to you, Commissioner okay. Smith.
Fine.
Okay. Thank you. First off, I want to say thank you to the staff for putting together the information and doing the briefing. It was helpful. The plan here has been in the makings for a couple of years, the outline that Eric provided. And, you know, it's good to see that the thoughts and discussions that we've had over the course of the past year, for me, year and a half, have been captured, and that there's been a lot of work that's been done during the interim, from the time that we've had it in front of us to the various points along the way here. So compliments for keeping that going and bringing it forward. The science form is, that's intriguing to me. I think we often hear that the science says, and the reality is science says, but there's a fair amount of different opinions in that, and it isn't entirely clear. And so the idea of this forum to me is can be really helpful to us. And I guess to that end, I'm curious as to what the forum is going to look like in terms of the structure, the timing, a little bit more detail on that.
On the external working group, is that what you're asking about, the structure?
Yes, you were talking about a science communications forum.
Oh, the science communications forum. Yes. Thank you, Commissioner Anderson. If Jerry Nelson is available to chime in, he could discuss more about the forum, but it's going to be, as he's getting logged in, what I can tell you is these people have kind of volunteered their time. And so that's a wonderful thing. And I believe it's going to all be done virtually. And there's going to be a designation of which papers are going to be looked at, identification of that world of papers, and then identification of what is going to be asked of each paper. And then there'll be kind of that independent review and then discussion, you know, by the group level to pull together the final results in the report. But Jerry, if you're able to correct that or fill that out.
No, I think you've hit it pretty good, Eric. So it will be an effort to assemble all of the works that we can find that are pertinent to the topic. And then with this 10-member panel, 6 internals, 4 externals, take a good hard look at the questions that were asked, the methods, the techniques, how well those questions were answered, and also identifying any gaps or future needs where the science world hasn't addressed it yet, but they probably ought to be thinking about it when it comes to this particular topic. And so we want to get a good critical eye and an objective eye on the strengths of these works, and then assess them, for lack of a better term, score them out and see how strong they are and see how much weight and how much credence policymakers and managers should be applying to these works when they make their decisions.
So the information that is collected, gathered, shared, is that then going to be like in a presentation mode to the public, including the commissioners in this process? Is that the intent?
Well, our intent is to provide a report, a written report that would be available to all.
I'm sort of thinking that it might be useful to look at it in the same way that we did the hatchery science review, and even consider a presentation to the full commission at some point, or a workshop for the full commission. But we'll see how it unfolds and make those decisions in the future.
It's
been useful exercises, certainly for the commission and for the department in the past. So pleased to hear this is going on. So Commissioner Kuntz, thank you, Jerry. Good to see you.
Just a couple of quick comments. The first one is on the science review, and I second everybody's opinion that this is great. But I would recommend you rethink the idea of not having any non-NGOs or academics on there, because I've been involved in these, and they're only as good as people maybe that's not the right word, but having a wide diversity of opinion. And when they're all from, the external reviewers are all from state management agencies, you're gonna be starting out already with people questioning it. I also have just a quick question, then one more general comment. The quick question is, when we get towards 100 removals out of a population, assuming that they're independent aged animals, that's like 4%. Do you take those out of the harvest guidelines?
So I'll answer that, Commissioner Kuntz, and Anise is on, and he may want to chime in as well. But there is not a direct correlation between, there's not an exercise where we look at public safety removals and therefore reduce the guideline count for a PMU. The modeling that went into the development of our population numbers and the 16%, the harvest rate kind of window that we look at incorporated recognition that there were alternative fatalities, other things that removed cats from the population, including public safety removals. So when it was done at the time, you saw the data, it's fair to say that those removals were not at least documented as at the same level as they are now. But the work that was done kind of incorporated that into the thinking, and then comes up with the guideline numbers. At the district level, they write their and affirm their guidelines every year, and they have the opportunity to consider if they feel like things need to change on their landscape. They do look at the demographic data at that time, the age structure, what they're seeing from the harvest, et cetera, and make a look at that to determine if there should be a change to their guidelines. But there is not a direct because of this public safety removal number, the guideline shifts in the following way.
Okay, well, I'm glad you're looking at that. I want to make a general comment because we're out of time. And that is, potentially all wildlife is dangerous. And, I think our challenge in this as commissioners is that, we're constantly balancing really risk and benefit. And I really applaud, all the educational, everything you presented today. But, I don't hear much about what are the benefits of cougars on the landscape. And I think we could do a much better job. I'll give you two quick examples because we're out of time. One is deer collisions, okay? There's 5,000 deer collisions with vehicles in Washington State. Ironically, one of the 9 areas that the Department of Transportation highlights is Goldendale, Washington. So I'll let you think about that one. And then the other point that I want to make, a more general point, is that I don't think the public or we appreciate really the keystone effect that cougars have. I tried to do some back of the envelope calculations this morning, and something like 14,000 pounds of meat is delivered to the ecosystem by cougars every day. I mean, that's more than McDonald's serves out in a day in Washington State. So what does that, you know, what does that matter that they kill and they leave a big chunk of meat there on the table? Well, that, you know, people in the Tetons have seen, for example, that some 30 species of animals feed off of those carcasses. And that's a, you know, really a keystone effect that I think we don't, you know, really appreciate. The point of my story is that when we talk about risk, we ought to do more talking about what are the benefits. We ought to be doing more research and collaborating with researchers that are figuring out the benefits. So when we make those hard decisions about how many cougars to try to maintain on the landscape, and when we make those hard conversations about to the public about living with that risk, I think if they understood both the economic and the ecological and the well-being risk, you know, it's not just simply a matter of having the thrill of seeing a cougar in the wild. It's the ecosystem effects. They're literally a keystone species that if you take them out, a lot more collapses. So anyway, that's what I think about, you know, the emphasis on managing both risk and benefits in making these kinds of safety decisions, because after all, a healthy ecosystem is actually about human safety and well-being.
Thank you, Commissioner Kuntz. Commissioner Thorburn, as you know, I'm going to have to depart. I know you can continue the meeting as you need to. If I could, just a quick parting comment on my end is, you know, in agreement with Commissioner Kuntz and recognizing that some of our challenges are even around messaging and the language that we use. You know, we have legislation that designates dangerous wildlife, and so we have to use those terms. This group is a cougar safety team because we've heard a lot about the public's desire to know that we are concerned about their safety in cougar country. But there's certainly other ways to describe cougar management and cougar human engagement, including the positive beneficial side. So we all struggle with that. And all I can say is as we work on our partnerships and messaging and our community response, increasing what we can provide as far as benefits of cougars, as you've described, we do some of that, but we can work to do more. So I appreciate your input. And with that,
hey, Eric, before you go,
So Eric does have to leave. What I was going to suggest is that we go ahead and continue for another few minutes. Anise is on the call. Perhaps Anise can deal with some of the questions that are coming up, as well as Deputy Chief and Jerry and others, Dr. Nelson and others. So we do have to let Eric go, but we will continue with the questions. And Lorna had her hand up, and then I'll turn to you.
Okay, Commissioner Thorburn, just real quick, I told Eric that I would fill in for him. Not that I have any particular knowledge of cougars, but I'll help do some traffic directing, okay?
Sorry. Yeah. Thanks, Amy.
Okay.
So, yeah. Unfortunately, my question probably is primarily for Eric, though, Eric and Anise both. And first of all, I want to kind of echo what Commissioner Kuntz said, and that is that a lot of this cougar program appears to be driven by a perceived threat that, you know, I spent from 2012 till 2020 as executive director for Western Wildlife Outreach, and our primary focus was doing outreach education around how to coexist with large carnivores. And there is so much unrealistic fear based on lack of information about what it really means to live and recreate and work in cougar country. Sure, as Fred said, almost any animal, including, you know, my lap dog, can be dangerous, but the risk from cougars is really so minimal compared to the other risks we take in our lives. So we really need to do a better focused job of outreach and education. And I think you would even find that some of the differences in numbers of reported encounters from region to region have to do with where people understand that more. I live in a neighborhood, my husband and I live in a neighborhood where cougars are seen weekly. My husband saw one just last night. We don't call that in. My neighbors, we understand that cougars are part of the landscape, part of the ecosystem. They killed a deer in the neighbor's backyard. Nobody got excited about it. So outreach and education really is key. And I really hope we can, switch the focus from, these responding to every call that I saw a cougar. The ones that really get me is there was a cougar sighted 3 blocks from an elementary school. My reply to that is, great, so what? Cougars probably pass by that grade school frequently. Okay, I'll get off my soapbox, but really the key to solving the conflict question is this outreach and education. It's not killing every cougar that gets reported. And, I'm going to push that as long as I'm on the commission. So I'll get off my soapbox. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Smith. Commissioner Baker, your hand's up.
Thank you, Kim. My request is just that we, now that we've had this presentation and we know what's happening, that we have another one of these forums with whomever the department wants to allocate their time to us. I have a bunch of questions. And so I'd like to request another hour where we can actually discuss this, given that we've had the presentation. And if that isn't feasible, maybe Amy can help me with that. Then I'm going to request some of my own time with appropriate staff.
Amy, do you have anything that you want to say, Deputy Director?
Thank you, Commissioner Baker, and thank you, Commissioner Thorburn. I think we can, this is a wildlife committee, and I think if we want to bring it forward and have more conversation, that's absolutely appropriate. It's also absolutely appropriate, Commissioner Baker, for you to shoot me your questions, and we'll gather some staff together to have a conversation. So either approach works for us. I mean, our intention is to be as transparent and to give the information that you all need in a timely way so that you can make decisions that come in front of you. So either approach works for us.
Thank you, Amy. Well, Kim, you're the chair of the Wildlife Committee. Do you have a preference? When we were going through the Cougar Harvest Guidelines last year, I spent a lot of time on my own with staff, and that was good for me, but it was not good for the rest of the commission because I was utilizing all those resources without the benefits accruing to everybody. So I think another meeting, given that the presentation was long and we haven't had a chance to discuss it, would be in order, but it's not really my portfolio to set the agendas for wildlife committees.
Yeah, I definitely think this is something we need to keep in front of the wildlife committee. Need to think about timing. It might be useful to wait perhaps until the science review group has kind of kicked off a little so that we have a little more structure information around that. But I can touch bases with you, Barbara, and we can think about the timing. But I do think this is of great interest to the public as well as us, and something that we asked of staff. So we do need to keep a close eye on it. So anyway, I'll touch bases with you about timing and thinking about that.
Thank you.
I would like to invite Molly, Commissioner Linville. Do you have any questions, since you can't raise your hand, or anything, any comments that you want to make?
Thank you, Commissioner Thorburn. I don't have any questions at this time. I would fully support another meeting, and I think that's a good idea. I also appreciate Commissioner Baker, you know, saying if she gets the information, that's good for her. But I think it is something that, you know, the whole committee should get the opportunity to hear. So that'd be my vote.
Sounds good. I don't see any more hands. I do see another hand, Deputy Director.
Thank you, Commissioner Thorburn. So it would be super useful if folks are coming out of this with sort of the questions they'd like to follow up on, and then we can gather that information together. So Commissioner Baker, if you have a list, shoot it our way. You know, any other commissioner that has, I heard some desire to dig into the differences between Region 1 and other regions. We can dig into that, maybe bring some staff from Region 1 to talk about it. I heard some interest in understanding the age class of the cougars, and so we can add that to our list of making sure we bring that information forward. So, you know, like let us know where you want to go, and we can make sure we have the right science staff or policy staff or a combination of both available.
Thank you, Amy. This is Barbara. Really quickly in response, I can easily send you my questions, but what I'm talking about, as well as maybe getting the questions answered, is us having a chance to just have a dialogue, because so many times we have these meetings that are set, we just don't have time, and then we just don't have a chance to talk about it. So I would like to reserve some time for that as well.
I'll also note that besides the science panel just coming together, the science review panel, the regional reviews are almost complete. And then those are going to be looked at as well. And it might be helpful to have information from those reviews for another meeting as well, because I think it touches on some of the questions that have come up today. You know, there are definitely regional differences. So, and that I was pleased to hear that that's being taken into consideration. So I'll just add that. And I'm not seeing any other hands. So with that, I will thank everybody. Thanks to Eric for and the good work of the group. It's good to see all of you, or at least see your names on the list. We appreciate all the effort that's going into this. So with that, I'm going to adjourn the meeting. Thank you.
Thank you.